Joey Votto calls it a career while Aaron Judge is on pace for 60 home runs. All that and more on today's First Pitch. Let's talk. Yes, welcome on into First Pitch for Thursday, August 22nd, 2024. I'm Lindsey Crosby of Athlon Sports. He's Christian Rao, managing editor of InsideTheCardinals.com. And tons of games yesterday, Christian. Lots of really intriguing, lots of walk-offs, lots of intriguing finishes. But before we do that, we have to talk about the finish to a career. Longtime Cincinnati Reds great Joey Votto, who was spending this year with the Toronto Blue Jays in their minor league system trying to rehab from an ankle injury, is calling it quits. Immediate first reactions here are he's got 356 home runs. He's just shy of a 345 slash line for his career with a 294 average. Is Joey Votto a Hall of Famer in 5 years?
I think he should be. I think he personally should be. I think you have to look a little deeper than the stats for Joey Votto, because what he meant to the game for the past 17 years, I think, is even more important than his stats. But his stats still line up as well. If you look at, you know, Todd Helton's stats, who just made it in the Hall of Fame, and Joey Votto's, they're very comparable. So I think he is a player that should definitely be in. I think that his last couple seasons, injury plague seasons, might hurt him in recency bias. I don't think it should, because he played so many years in the majors and looked good doing it. One thing he has that Todd Helton doesn't have is an MVP as well. So I think Joey Votto is a Hall of Famer. He's definitely, in my book, a Hall of Famer. We'll see him in the Reds Hall of Fame. We'll see him in the Canadian Hall of Fame. And we should see him in Cooperstown as well.
Yeah, and I think the argument for Joey Votto can kind of be drilled down to the peak, right? From 2010, his MVP season, through 2017, which was his MVP runner-up season, he batted 315, 438, 542, averaged 26 home runs a year. Struck out as many times as he walked, 108 of each. Averaged 108 each. It was 862 on walks to 864 in strikeouts. But, I mean, you look in here, he led baseball in walks three times in that span. He led baseball in on base three times in that span. He led his league an additional three times in on base. He was one of the best players in baseball in that peak. And I know he played a lot longer than Dale Murphy, but him having that peak like he did, that 7 or 8 year peak where you can argue he was one of the best players of the 2010s before dropping off. And, you know, his last 5 years, I think he played a total just under 500 games. He averaged like 90 games a season and he batted something like 240. Kind of reminds me of the Dale Murphy situation of, he had the back-to-back MVPs in the 80s. He had a really high peak, but then he fell off even harder than Votto did, and then was out of the league sooner than Votto was. I worry that voters are going to say no. And in my mind, kind of like to your point there, very comparable to Todd Helton as far as similarity scores and things like that. His 7 year peak is higher than the average 7 year peak of a Hall of Fame first baseman. According to Baseball Reference, they have that Jaws metrics in there. His career WAR is right there in line with the average first baseman in the Hall of Fame. His WAR per 162 is higher than the average first baseman in the Hall of Fame. So it feels like he should be a Hall of Famer, but kind of like I have questions about, are they going to recognize all of the off the field stuff and give it to him? Because Dale Murphy, I'm not bitter at all, Dale Murphy has not gotten any of the recognition for the off the field stuff like he should have.
No, I agree. Dale Murphy should definitely be a Hall of Famer. And there are some comparisons here, and it's leading to that recency bias of what they were at the end of their careers. They obviously weren't the player that they were at the beginning of their careers, or at least their peaks, or remotely close because of injury seasons. But regardless, I think that Dale Murphy should be a Hall of Famer. I think there's no doubt about that. I've wrote a really big piece about that just about a month ago on bravestoday.com. But you did, Joey Votto, I think when he is eligible to be a Hall of Famer, no shopping cart should be safe until he is in Cooperstown. Not a single shopping cart, Lindsay.
And just fun fact, that 2029 list as of right now, Miguel Cabrera, we can agree, Hall of Famer, no question there. Outside of that, there's some really interesting guys between Votto's on that list. Adam Wainwright's on that list. Corey Kluber, Nelson Cruz, Michael Brantley. Who is your borderline guy off of that list with the assumption that that Miggy and Joey Votto are in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I think those two are guaranteed. I really do think Joey Votto is a Hall of Famer, and no doubt about Miggy. I think my borderline guy is Adam Wainwright. I think he's the one that sits right on that borderline with me, because he had a great career as well, great length. But I think he just is going to miss Cooperstown. I think you throw him into the Hall of Very Good. I think that's where we sit, Adam Wainwright. And that hurts coming from a guy who likes the Cardinals. That hurts for me, but I think Adam Wainwright will just miss Cooperstown.
Yeah, that 2020 through 2022 kind of resurgence that he had, where he put up ERAs under 4 kind of there at the end. You'd like to think that helped, but it just kind of feels like he was a different pitcher after 2015. He just never quite got back to the right form. And I feel like that's going to get held against him a little bit. My borderline guy is Corey Kluber. Debuted at 25, retired at 37, was not good in the last few seasons. But his five-year peak, 2014 through 2018, he wins 2 Cy Youngs at an ERA of 2.85 across over 1,000 innings. So he put up he averaged 218 innings a year for 5 years. Again, won 2 Cy Youngs, walked 1.8 batters per 9 innings, struck out 10.1, was just incredibly dominant. Again, 1-2 Cy Youngs, had 2 third place finishes and a 9th place finisher, and 3 times got MVP votes. Like, it feels like that's the amazing peak of a dude that should be, you should be paying attention to for the Hall of Fame. But again, you've got the longevity thing. Does he have all of the stuff they look for as far as the number of wins? He finished with 116 wins, so he's not anywhere close to 200 or 300. Finished with 1,725 strikeouts, so didn't come close to 2,000. Do they recognize the dominant peak and put him in? I feel like they probably don't. Another borderline guy, but I feel like there's a lot of guys that you can make arguments for on this list, and so it'll be interesting to see what happens outside of the Joey Votto, Miguel Cabrera duo.
Yeah, I think that peak is 5 years might be a little too short, but you also got to remember that in his older years, he threw a no-hitter in second last year with the Yankees. So that was another thing as well. So he still showed that he had it towards the end of the year. It just wasn't as crazy as that peak was. But that five-year peak in comparison to his whole season, I think that's fair to put him as a borderline candidate.
Yeah, and you can extend that earlier a season and make it a six-year peak, and his ERA is still under 3. It's a 2.96. So it's still under 3, even if you extend it up a year. So it's just 2019 with him getting hurt and only pitching in 7 games makes it tough to make it a 7-year peak on that. Okay, so going from a guy who retired, probably going to make the Hall of Fame, to a guy that we think is on a Hall of Fame pace, Aaron Judge, homered twice in the Yankees 8-1 win over the Guardians. We discussed his MVP candidacy yesterday on Happy Hour, so go check that out. It's his to lose. We're kind of unanimous on that. But seeing this result, the 8-1 victory over the Guardians, combined with the Mets walking off Baltimore again, the second time in this series, with a 4-3 win, Baltimore's now behind the Yankees in the East. It's only half a game, but they're still behind. Do we have any changes to our predictions of who wins this division?
No, I think it's still a borderline thing because, we're talking about Aaron Judge here, but the biggest concerns for both of those squads between Baltimore and New York is pitching. And we just saw even more issues with the Yankees pitching. Luis Gill the other day had 6 walks in 3 innings pitched. He leaves the game with back tightness. He goes on the IL. So now they have one more issue with that rotation. And the bullpen has obviously been really bad. When you look at Baltimore, they've had a plethora of injuries with their rotation, and now their bullpen is not showing up. We've already had issues with Craig Kimbrell. They go ahead and name Sir Anthony Dominguez the new closer. He has not performed since he's been named that. So maybe they just need to not name anybody the closer, and maybe that'll be the case. Maybe
game by game basis, right?
Yeah. Maybe there's a confidence issue. I don't know. I really don't know. I don't want to go ahead and predict or assume anything. But Aaron Judge, he's well on pace to hit 60 home runs this year. How crazy is that we're going to see him do that again, Lindsay? I mean, we saw him hit 62 in 2022, and then he's on pace to do it again. So he took one year off to get just a measly 37 last year. Yeah. And then he's 62, and then probably another 60 this year.
The injuries don't help. That gosh darn outfield fence that he ran into last year.
Right.
Okay, looking at more of these results, the Diamondbacks sweep the Marlins in the series. They won 10-8 yesterday. But here's the kind of concern that I had with this. Jordan Montgomery, who we thought was turning a corner, 5 2/3 innings, 10 hits, 6 runs. I believe gives up 2 home runs, only strikes out 4 Miami Marlins in the game. Picked up 12 whiffs, only had like a 24% CSW. Given the fact that he can't seem to string together consecutive good starts, and his ERA is dreadful this year, what's the playoff rotation for Arizona behind Zach Allen?
Yeah, I don't think you can have Jordan Montgomery as one of your three. I don't think you can. Now, if you have injuries, which, again, Arizona's been dealing with all year, I think you don't have a choice. But I think you have to keep him out of it as well. Rodriguez, I think you have to put him in there if he's healthy. Are we going to see Kelly be able to last into the postseason? I mean, there is a lot of questions with this Diamondbacks rotation, but if I'm the manager of the Diamondbacks, there is no way that I could be able to say, yes, you know what? Let's give Jordan Montgomery a game in the playoffs after what we've seen from him. We thought we were gonna have a bounce back August 3rd. He had a great game where he only allowed one run. It was a home run, but he was a short stint, very short stint. Then he had a quality start on his last one against Colorado, sure, but still quality start. That Miami Marlins game, though, bringing back all those questions again. This is one of those things, Lindsay, that Jordan Montgomery, you talk about the narrative with him about how he starts so late in the season because of the whole stuff going on with Boris. That's got to obviously go away now. We're far enough into the season to be able to say, okay, he just doesn't have it this year. And what I don't know. I really don't know, but there's no way that you can say that Jordan Montgomery is going to be a starter of the playoffs if everything falls into place. No way.
Yeah. Zach Gallen's got to be first. I think after that, you're looking at some combination of Eduardo Rodriguez, Merrill Kelly, and Brandon Pfaadt. Let's not forget about Brandon Pfaadt. If you remember last year, the postseason last year, scuffled in the wild card game versus Milwaukee, but he goes out against the Dodgers in the NLDS, 4 1/3 innings, no runs, only 2 hits, no walks, gets 2 starts against Philly in the NLCS, 9 2/3 innings, 2 runs on 6 hits, only gives up 1 homer to Philly, which that was their entire postseason was hitting home runs. 2 walks to 16 strikeouts in 9 2/3 innings. Like, I think Brandon Pfaadt can be one of your three. This year, his ERA is, I mean, it's a 4.08, but he had an ERA almost at 6 in the regular season last year and then turned it on in the postseason. So I do believe there is a runway to do some combination of Zach Gallen's game one, provided you don't have to burn him in the wildcard series. But you've got Eduardo Rodriguez, you've got Merrill Kelly, you've got Brandon Pfaadt. You can mix and match. And then I think you've done enough bullpen reinforcements. AJ Puck has an ERA under 1 since joining the team. He's got 13 appearances, 11 innings. He's allowed a grand total of 1 earned run, right? So you've got bullpen pieces from Sewold, from Ginkel, from Martinez, from Thompson, and then from Puck, where I think you can, if you have to take a guy like a Ryan Nelson and throw him one time through the order and then go to the bullpen, I think, or go to a long relief guy, I think you can do that. I think they've got it, but I agree with you. The way it is right now, Jordan Montgomery can't be one of those guys. Like he probably, I feel like he might make the postseason roster and be stuck in the pen. And if you see him do something where he comes out and is dominant out of the pen in multiple innings, maybe they give him a start in the next round. But you can't pencil him in for your postseason rotation right now, which is a tough place to be for Arizona, because you're just, I mean, you've been dealing with injuries and you need all of your pitchers to be great right now, because you can't count on your offense doing that. I mean, the offense has been hot. Yeah, at a certain point in time, you have to wonder, with the guys you have on the IL, with your Moreno, your Walker, your Kettle Marte, how long can Jake McCarthy keep this up, right? How long can Geraldo Perdomo keep this up? How long can Jock Peterson go nuclear? He's batting 292 this year. Like, how long can these guys keep it up? And I think your pitching is definitely a concern here.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is they're still doing all of this. They still have all these concerns, all these injury concerns on the offensive side as well. And they're still sweeping teams. They're still finding a way to be in the wild card race. And they're still right in contention with the Dodgers for the National League West. So I think that, you know, even though they're having all these issues, there is still a good path for them to make a good run in the postseason. But I'm with you. I just don't know if Jordan Montgomery is that answer.
Yeah. Going to the other side of that matchup, speaking of the Marlins, the World Baseball Classic for 2026 was announced. We have the pools. We know the qualifying rounds will be Puerto Rico, Houston, Texas, Tokyo, Japan, and then Miami. Miami all obviously gets to host one of the two quarterfinals, and they'll have the championship again. Which of these two pools do you think is tougher? Pool A, Puerto Rico, Cuba, Panama, Canada, and a qualifier. Or Pool D, Venezuela, the Dominican Republic, the Netherlands, Israel, and a qualifier. Which one of those two would you rather least be in?
Whew, that's a really tough question. Which one would I rather not be in?
Yeah.
I think I'm going to have to lean to I'd rather not be in A. And I think it's tough. So, I mean, I think it's really close. But I'm going to go with A here. I would rather not have to go against Puerto Rico, Cuba, Canada, Panama in a regular qualifier there. I will say this, March 5th, 2026 to March 17th, where this lead goes, I cannot wait, because I'm going to try and get some tickets. I'm going to try to go to this.
Yeah, it's the environment in Miami, I heard, was tons of fun. I do think I'm with you. You only two teams only advance out of each pool. And Pool D, you feel like the favorites have to be Venezuela and the Dominican. I mean, obviously, kind of given the heritage of both of those, the baseball heritage of both of those places. They do play in Miami, though. And Pool A, you're playing in Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. And you could see a case for Cuba. You can see a case for Panama. You could see, it's tougher, but you could see a case for Puerto Rico. And I think if they nailed every single one of their selections, you could see a case for Canada in there. I mean, they're going to have Freddie Freeman. Like, there's enough Canadian baseball players who could play, where I think you could see potentially three or four different teams come out of there. Although I do have to imagine Panama and Cuba are your favorites, but it's just something where I feel like there's maybe the top two teams aren't as good as the rest, but it, like, as Pool D is, where it's heavily weighted towards Venezuela and the Dominican. But I feel like there's more teams that could get hot and win the whole thing. Whereas Pool D, I don't think anybody's really expecting Israel and the Netherlands to knock off those teams and take the pool. So kind of agree with you. But also the big takeaway is I want to go to this too. I can't. Just watching it last year was so great. I need to go to these things. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, first pitch live at the World Baseball Classic sounds pretty good in 2026.
There you go. All right, into quick pitch. Let's grab a couple stories from around the league. Ellie De La Cruz joins the 2060 club in their 11-7 victory over Toronto. Goes 3-for-4 with a homer, 3 runs, 3 RBIs, and a stolen base. Here's my question. At the beginning of the season, if I had told you that Ellie De La Cruz would hit 20 homers and steal 60 bases this season, would you have been disappointed that that was all that he was able to do?
beginning of the season, like as the before we even started games, or
yes, before we even started games. If I said Elly De La Cruz is going to hit 20 homers and steal 60 bases, would you have been like, that's a good season, or would you have thought he can do more?
I think that I would say that was a good season. If you would have asked me at the All-Star break, I'd say I wish that there was more, because he was on pace at one point to have 100 stolen bases. But if you were asking at me at the beginning of the season, I'd say, yeah, that's pretty good. I was that Reds game, by the way, they were down 6-0 at one point, and they come back to win 11-6. But yeah, I think I'd be okay with that. What about you? Would you?
It feels like he's capable of more power production. When you hear the numbers about Elly De La Cruz's exit velocities being some of the best in baseball, if you would have told me, hey, he's only going to have 20 homers in late August, and it's to be technical, it's 22. So he's slightly above that. But if you had told me it's going to be a 2060 season, I'd have been a little bit disappointed, because I feel like a 30-70 season was entirely realistic, given how much he talked about. He stole 35 bases last year, despite only batting 235 and only walking what felt like 30 times. And so he was rarely on base, it felt like. And yet he hit for a cycle in the first 2 weeks he was up, right? It feels like he was capable of a 30-70 season. And you're still there. You're 8 homers away. You're 10 steals away. You could do it. But if you had told me, hey, he'll do a 2060 season, I got to admit, I probably would be a little bit disappointed in that. Just feels like he could have done more. But talk about doing more. The Cardinals, they walk off Milwaukee in extras under the grand slam. So 10-6 in 10 innings. But the St. Louis Cardinals here, is this fixable? Is this St. Louis Cardinals team fixable? Because it feels to me from the outside, you obviously cover the Cardinals for InsideTheCardinals.com. It feels from the outside like there's not a lot of high quality depth on this roster, and that the 40 man and the options they have in the minors don't complement the 26 man roster very well. And they're, in essence, they're banking on, we have a starter at every position and this dude has to perform. And if he doesn't perform, we don't really have a lot of other answers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is fixable. I think that they have to make some big adjustments personally. I think that there are a lot of older guys on this roster that are not performing, where they look to make some Band-Aids to try and get themselves back into the postseason to make the fans happy again, and it didn't work out, because they're not going to make the postseason this year. It's just not going to happen. The pitching didn't work. The pitching's older. They're also going to be tied to Sonny Gray for the next couple of years on a high contract. You got to answer
questions. And they lost a draft pick to sign him, too.
Exactly. And you got to answer questions about what's going on with Paul Goldschmidt, who's, they're talking about possibly contract extensions, but his performance has been not great at all. Nolan Arenado has not been great, although he'd had that walk-off grand slam last night. Yeah, there's a lot of questions. When you look at the depth, though, yeah, they're finally, in my mind, finally made some right moves. Demoted Nolan Gorman down to AAA to go ahead and make those adjustments, because when he is on, he's one of the best power hitters in baseball. Like, he has shown that he can be one of the best power hitters in baseball. But his strikeout percentage is so bad. FanGraphs had something out the other day, and he, out of like, I was like, something around like 19,000 players have had over the amount of plate appearances that Nolan Gorman has had, and he's placed in like the bottom 5 of those 19,000 seasons among strikeouts. So that's obviously a concern. They moved Jordan Walker back down to the minors. They never gave him a fair chance back up in the majors this year. So I think they have the right pieces. I think that there's some questions between getting on the right page between the front office and management. I don't think they're on the same page between John Mozeliak and Ollie Marmol. I think they need to make some serious, serious changes in the offseason and moving forward. I don't know if they will, but I think they need to.
Yeah, kind of agreed there. Minnesota Twins score 11 off of 18 hits. They beat the Padres 11-4. Jackson Merrill hits a home run. Interesting. We're going to have a Rookie of the Year conversation on today's Happy Hour, and I think it's going to be interesting to see where he is in relation to Paul Skeens. Fernando Tatis gets moved to the 60-day IL. Any concern about the Padres on this, or is this just one of those, you ran into a team that got hot for a day and you're going to be fine in the long run.
Yeah, I think you should be fine. The Twins are also a really good baseball team. They're battling themselves for the AL Central lead. And I mentioned it earlier this week. I have been really impressed with this team. And I said I wouldn't be surprised if they took over the AL Central before the week is over. So I think the Padres would be fine. I am a little more concerned about moving Tatis to the 60-day. What does that mean, Lindsay? He was on the 10-day for a long time. Now he's on the 60-day. Does that mean he even has a possibility to return before the playoffs is over?
Yeah, so moving from the 10-day to the 60-day, and a lot of people kind of get this wrong. It doesn't reset the time you have to be on the injured list. I think that's the big thing people don't quite get. What it does from the 10-day to the 60-day is it gets you a 40-man roster spot. It takes the guy off the 40-man roster temporarily, but he's already missed more than 60 days. And so you put a guy on, you can't put somebody directly on the 60-day IL unless you have a corresponding move. You put him on the 10-day, and then when you need that 40-man roster spot, you can then move him to the 60-day. He can come back at any time, right? He's already been out more than 60 days. So common misconception there. They still say he's on track to get back before the season ends. And imagine just taking this lineup and then slotting Fernando Tatis Jr. into it for the postseason. That's a little vicious. My one concern here is Matt Waldron made this start, gave up 10 runs on 12 hits in 4 1/3 innings. It's his third consecutive start of 5 or more runs allowed. His last 3 outings, the team is 1-2. They actually won the first one of these games. But 14 1/3 innings, 22 earned runs, so a 13.81 ERA. So like right now, Dylan Cease is your undisputed number one. Yu Darvish, I don't believe, is back with the team.
No.
And so if you don't trust Matt Waldron, if he's wearing down from fatigue from a long season, is Michael King your game two starter? Is Joe Musgrove your game two starter? Like, it's not, I'm a little concerned about your 1-3 in the postseason, especially if you have to burn Cease in a wild card game.
Yeah, and I will say that Perez, since coming over to San Diego, has been really good as well. I think he's been one of the best starters compared to all of the ones that were traded over in ERA. So
that's,
I guess,
right. 2.74 ERA in 4 starts. I forgot about Martin Perez. So he might be a guy.
He made me a liar, so I have to keep tracks of him, because he made me a liar the first time we talked about him since the deadline. I thought he wasn't going to move the needle. He might actually be a really big piece for the Padres moving forward. But Waldron, because of all his off-speed pitches, he could fit well in the bullpen in a postseason if you could use a rotation differently for the Padres. So I guess in comparison to other rotations, even in their division, talking about the Diamondbacks, I guess I'm not as worried about them.
Yeah, and kind of wrapping up here with some Texas Rangers stuff here. Wyatt Langford walks off the Pittsburgh Pirates. They win 1-0 in what's been a lost season for the Texas Rangers. And you had a really wild stat for me about Bruce Bochy and his struggles in back-to-back seasons, right?
Yeah, Bruce Bochy, you know, he has managed 5 pennant-winning teams in his going to be a Hall of Fame career. He has never led a team after winning a pennant back to the postseason. And it looks like it's going to happen again this following year. I thought that was a wild stat.
Absolutely wild. What a wild stat. But our minor league update, they've got some help coming eventually. Kumar Rocker, who drafted by the Mets, they famously don't sign him. He goes to Indy Ball, gets drafted by the Rangers the next year. Number 2 prospect, according to MLB Pipeline, he lowered his ERA to 0.46 with 4 2/3 scoreless innings for the Rough Riders. 4 2/3 scoreless, strikes out 8. Do we think he's finally back? He had a lot of health issues. He had major surgery. Is he finally back to the guy that the dominant player we thought he was at Vanderbilt?
Yeah, I think we are about to see Kumar Rocker. I think we're about to finally see him show up. And I think I'd love to see him get one start in the majors before the season's over, especially since we're already sticking a fork in the Texas Rangers. So, yes.
It is a lost season.
Let me see it, because I think we are going to see him back. I'd love to see it.
Yeah. 2.03 ERA, 0-1 record this season, 8 appearances, 7 starts in the minors as he works his way back from Tommy John surgery. This has been First Pitch for Thursday, August 22nd. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, leave us a comment. Subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell so you know when we drop the next episode, which will be this afternoon, talking about the Rookie of the Year races. Until then, this has been First Pitch.